This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Barbara O'Brien, President and CEO of Dairy Management Incorporated. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with DMI's Barbara O'Brien next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Barbara O'Brien has more than 20 years' experience working on behalf of farmers in the dairy industry. Certainly, there are challenges and opportunities ahead for both producers and the industry that supports them. O'Brien says resilient is the way that may best describe individuals that bring dairy products to our table.
Their willingness and ability to wake up the next day and do what they do best, which is produce milk and put food on our table. I will say, from a checkoff standpoint, we do continue to ride the waves in terms of the ups and downs, government, customer, consumer expectations, changing consumer behavior, given inflation and other challenges. So like so many businesses, we've needed to remain nimble. Our farmers expect us to be nimble and to ensure that programming can respond. I think there's some great examples. As you look at 2022, we saw a slight downturn in domestic sales. Our export engine, U.S. DEC, was able to pick up the slack. And, you know, I think overall U.S. dairy still ended up on the positive side. And the reverse occurred in 2023. As we saw headwinds in the export markets, the domestic market recovered and we were able to drive, you know, positive growth. So, you know, our job in checkoff is to keep a pulse of our farmers' sentiment and concerns, a pulse of the marketplace. And as our plan has designed, we now work with and through the rest of the value chain to ensure we're innovating and driving products into the market that consumers want.
Well, you don't have to look at the history very far back to realize that agriculture is cyclical, and certainly the dairy industry is cyclical. And I'm certainly not asking you to talk about policy, but if we're just describing the landscape that's going on, gosh, you've got the federal milk marketing order that is before the regulatory USDA, and you also have a farm bill that hopefully at some point is going to be produced. And these are just these are uncertain times for producers, not to mention the COVID situation and the ongoing dietary questions that are before consumers even today. You get a lot of choppy water to navigate.
Even through those waters, I believe that this is dairy's time. I think there's a fundamental restructuring occurring within the U.S. dairy industry as we continue to see consolidation at the farm level, unprecedented investment in plant infrastructure, diversifying our fluid capabilities, enormous new capacity coming online for cheese, powders. I feel those are signals of confidence in the future. I do not want to sound naive. It is going to be a challenging next couple of years. But given what you touched on in terms of the global environment, I believe U.S. dairy is well positioned to win and to continue to innovate, drive export growth, meet consumers' changing needs here in the United States, and continue to diversify our product portfolio in a way that meets an increasingly diverse population. I hear you on the challenge side, but I also, I'm going to try and maintain a glass half full perspective.
Can you identify what you see as the immediate challenge or challenges for the dairy industry and the checkoff? And maybe at the same time, balance that with the opportunity or opportunities that you see for the checkoff and for dairy farmers.
The challenges in the short term certainly are continued input costs and pay price for the farmer, making ends meet, making their operations sustainable over time. I am saddened, as I think we all are, to see the number of farm closures over the last few years. And that's an economic issue. That's a family issue, as many of these families don't have a next generation to step in or the means to keep the business going. From a marketplace standpoint, again, you know, I know we have our challenges there. Supply chains seem to be improving. Labor continues to be a challenge, I know, in some of our plant operations. But my overall sense is, you know, we as an industry are getting on top of that. So from a checkoff role, it's keeping our focus on what we can do to support the whole, to keep the science. Again, I will touch on that critical investment in nutrition, product, and environmental science on behalf of the category, that investment that farmers make, I am so grateful for, because frankly, if we were not making that investment, I'm not sure we'd see it in the category overall, and it is so essential to our long-term pipeline, a thriving industry. Our work in storytelling and marketing, those are the other levers that we need to continue to pull, talk about, as consumers have wanted to know more about where their food comes from, want assurances of the care of land, animals, and natural resources. Those are the stories we're telling, where consumers are in social and digital media, in e-commerce, where we can associate the farmer's good work to then lead to a product opportunity. We continue to balance, keep our eye on the dynamics of the category. At the same time, we need to continue to do what we do on behalf of farmers, and that's primarily the science and the storytelling.
Lots of quote-unquote experts like to talk about science. So what is considered reputable science and science worthy of guidance for the checkoff?
Wow. Yeah. You know, the good news is the dairy checkoff has taken a long and disciplined approach to nutrition science specifically, but the broader commitment to product R&D and now environmental science, dating back, I think, as you know, to 1915 with the National Dairy Council. And it's about third-party published research, a very disciplined development and review process. We've recently established third-party advisories to scrutinize our research work from the RFP process all the way through publication, just to bring that extra layer of rigor, of questions, and ultimately of endorsement for publication.
So the checkoff has food service partnerships with lots of popular fast food restaurants. Have those partnerships been successful, and have they all yielded the same result?
First of all, partnerships underpin almost every aspect of the checkoff business plan, and our partnerships with food service date back to the late 2000s, which we know another volatile time, certainly. And the engagements that we've had, yes, were driven by a consistent strategy, but the experience with each of the big three, I'd say, has been slightly different. So those big three partners over the last decade have been McDonald's, Domino's, and Taco Bell. From a consistency standpoint, you know, we went into those partnerships on behalf of farmers really looking for a level of like-mindedness on the opportunities for dairy growth and a willingness to invest in menu development, in new product development, and importantly, in marketing. These partners spend 10 times in a year what Dairy Checkoff could have spent in the early years when we were still doing consumer marketing work. So it's a like-minded and a set of values that marry with the farmer's values. It's a willingness to invest, to grow the business, and ultimately a demonstrated ability to engage consumers, new consumer behaviors around the products that they're offering. So whether that's an uptake in breakfast and the use of butter in breakfast, look at the trends behind coffee, or shall I say coffee-flavored milk, because so many of those beverages at McCafe, at Starbucks, at Dunkin'. They are milk-based products that are the primary carrier, and it's exciting to see that now cross channels into retail. With Domino's, the experience was, yes, it started as a innovation relationship where they came on television and said, we're going to rebuild our product from the bottom up, and we worked with them to improve the quality of the dairy ingredients in that rebuild. And they went on to innovate new pizza forms, new snacking forms, cheesy bites, and much, much more. But they, over the years, have evolved into what I'd consider to be a technology partner. You know, major plays that they have made over the years in terms of their ordering process, their marketing process, their delivery process, particularly through COVID, that really made them game-changing in the category overall. And then for Taco Bell, it's been all about the cheese and sort of the evolution of cheese from garnish to menu superstar. And the level of creativity in their menu development efforts have been amazing. There's going to be some new products in the next 12 months that farmers and, I think, consumers alike will just adore. So the criteria and approach was the same. The experience over a decade has differed, but the end result is measurable growth. That is ultimately what we're looking for. Each contract with these partners includes a growth percentage, and they keep performing within their own businesses and then the catalytic effect they have across their competitive set.
Barb, the National Dairy Council recently held a dairy matrix. So who came? What was the purpose, and what results can you measure from that meeting of professionals?
Oh, my goodness. It was such a privilege to be in the room at this Dairy Matrix Symposium. It was held in Washington, D.C. Let me first touch on the science and what the Dairy Matrix is. It builds on our decade of more than 80 studies, Jeff, that have been completed looking at the role of dairy fat in the diet. We all, you know, as an industry, we're all looking at overcoming historic perceptions and beliefs that fat is bad, and significant investments have been made in disproving sort of that legacy perception. The Dairy Matrix research builds on top of that, and it looks at the whole package of nutrients, of non-nutrients, the interaction thereof, and the role of fat within in delivering critical benefits to the people. This meeting had more than 100 attendees, academics, scientists, health professionals from around the world. Speakers included National Institutes of Health, U.S. Department of Ag, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, National Medical Association, Johns Hopkins. The list of renowned speakers just went on and on. And the purpose was to review the state of the science. You know, I talked earlier about our wanting to maintain third-party credibility and input in the process. That's what these 2 days were about, was really doing a deep dive into the evidence, looking at why the fat in dairy foods behaves differently, and importantly, the results that we're seeing in terms of certainly a neutral, but frankly, a beneficial link to reducing risk for heart disease, of type 2 diabetes, obesity, and high blood pressure. So that was the purpose. And, you know, again, having been in the room, I will tell you, I felt there was growing support and consensus behind this work. And we know that's going to be so important. You know, we will certainly publish the work, but several of the other dairy organizations like National Milk will use that science as they go into dietary guidance debates over the next couple of years, child nutrition reauthorization. As we know, this will ultimately influence, or could influence, perceptions around fat levels in the diet of children and adults.
USDA recently celebrated the first food item, quote, sustainably produced. So does sustainability have a place in the nutrition discussion, especially as it pertains to dairy?
Isn't that the million-dollar question? Thank you for that. You know, when I look at consumer research specifically, we know price, taste, and convenience continue to be the primary drivers of purpose. Health and wellness is of growing importance in that purchase decision, and sustainability has continued to rise in terms of its importance. But in my mind, it really is more almost table stakes in terms of satisfying people's curiosity and potential concerns around how the food is produced and how the animals and land are cared for. So yes, it has a place, but honestly, Barb's opinion is that the pendulum in this discussion has swung perhaps too far. It is important for us to keep a balanced perspective on food systems, and they start with food, not the elimination thereof. So I've been talking increasingly about what I consider to be a nutrition ROI, that we need to look at foods based on the return on investment of resources, labor, land, water, and look at the nutritional contribution that these products make to people's lives, per penny, per calorie. I'd like to see the conversation rebalance, Jeff, in terms of the role sustainability plays overall. Critically important, we know dairy is a solution. There's an awful lot farmers do every day to protect the land and natural resources. But let's remember, this is about food first.
Various generations of Americans have different dietary opinions. There are more choices for consumers today, and there's certainly more dairy than just the white gallon. So how are dairy products holding up in the race for the consumer dollar?
We're holding up well. Dairy is a powerhouse, Jeff. When I look at the data at retail, dairy is the largest edible aisle in the store. And although we occupy only about 3% of the refrigerated case, we contribute 8% of the profits to the overall store. I think dairy is holding its own without a doubt, bigger than snacks, carbonated soft drinks, even alcohol. And household penetration, as you likely know, has held strong. Somewhere on average, about 90% of households are consuming dairy products. We certainly, I think to your point, have seen enormous innovation in the beverage landscape specifically. Hundreds of choices of coffee, tea, water, juice at retail, and frankly, many of them fortifying with ingredients that milk and milk-based products offer naturally. So we think dairy is holding its own, and there's a lot of upside opportunity. In fact, we've just completed three major landscape reports that look at future growth for the category, looking at beverages, looking at health and wellness opportunities, and then finally looking at food service. We are sharing those insights with the industry, with co-ops and processors who ultimately will do that innovation work and take our products into the market. But it is going to take continued innovation. The competition is intense. The narrative, to your point, I think particularly from plant-based and other competitive sets can be challenging, but innovation is key in ensuring that we understand the forms and formats in which consumers want to eat and drink dairy products, and that's our job.
Barb, there are clear battle lines over nutrition programs in the country, and I'm not trying to draw you into those here, but let's talk about the WIC program, the SNAP program, especially milk available for students in schools, the overall children nutrition legislation that is available. How are these important to the dairy industry, and what are you monitoring as we advance and consider this debate?
Oh, my goodness. You know, school milk specifically and the availability of dairy in some of those critical programs like WIC and SNAP, as you referenced, you know, that has been a long-term commitment and of great importance to dairy farmers and the broader industry. And although there are certainly limits on what checkoff can and can't do, as you've pointed out, we stay out of the policy, the pricing arena. We have a long history in supporting school meal programs to ensure that dairy is available equitably. You know, I saw a statistic recently, Jeff, that starting as early as age 4, children are not meeting their daily dairy requirements. And this is especially concerning for communities of color who are consuming the least. So, you know, I will tell you, Checkoff has acted urgently in this last year. I would observe that the broader dairy industry has acted urgently, looking at the work IDFA did in organizing 37 milk processing organizations to proactively commit to new sugar standards. The Innovation Center, which is one of the organizations founded through the Checkoff, which brings the rest of the dairy value chain to the table to address social responsibility issues like childhood hunger. They too have established a school milk action team, which is going to look at complementing the work that IDFA is doing and National Milk's doing to address the school milk and the school meal experience overall and to ensure that dairy products are equitably available to all children in school. We also continue to pilot new business models for school buildings. Like farms, there is not a one-size-fits-all approach to dairy farmers and farming. There is not a one-size-fits-all approach to school buildings, especially coming through the pandemic. These schools are under so much pressure to address what we know are children's challenges, physical, social, and emotional, and to operate on what we know are increasingly tight budgets. So we've been doing a lot of pilot work, testing new points of access for dairy and for milk in the school building, looking at smoothies, hot chocolate programs, coffee programs, looking at refrigeration in different points of access in the building, like athletic departments, so kids who are there for before and after school programs can get access. And I'll tell you, every pilot we've done, we've even looked at one last area, is aseptic lactose-free. Again, as we look at the diversity of our school children population, we know lactose can become an issue. So we've done a pilot with the Cincinnati schools that shows, when available, aseptic lactose-free helps drive not just milk consumption, but it drives meal participation as well. Critical importance in the mix of all of these programs and in the diets of populations of color. In particular, we know, rely on some of these programs.
Barb, let's talk about product safety. Are there still points that need to be continually shared and reminded with consumers?
You know, Jeff, I am not an expert in product safety, but I will tell you, dairy foods are one of the most regulated products that go into the marketplace on any given day. And given the issues of the day, right now, and I'm talking specifically about the bird flu issues affecting dairy herds in a number of states, I want to assure you and ensure that consumers understand the safety of our commercial products, those products on the shelf, in the store, on your table, are as safe as ever before, that there are clear protocols and guidance that have been provided by USDA and other federal and state authorities, where in the case where an animal has contracted this condition, they are immediately moved to a hospital pen, their milk is separated from the standard supply and destroyed, and the milk that is intended for commercial use goes through its normal process of pasteurization, which in fact destroys any viral or other pathogen in the milk. So I just want to reiterate, milk today, cheese, yogurt, our products are safe, and we want consumers to continue to enjoy them as part of every meal.
Well, Robert Brown, we want to thank you very much for being a part of this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, and today you have the last word.
Thank you, Jeff, for the opportunity to speak with you and to share my excitement about the opportunities of the future for dairy and for U.S. dairy specifically.
Our thanks to Barbara O'Brien, President and CEO of Dairy Management Incorporated, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.